I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Well, hello, all you Hot Mess Clubhouse members. Welcome to this podcast, which is all about funny women, and in particular for this series, funny writers. This is a very special episode of the Clubhouse this week, as I got to meet one of my all-time heroes, Sophie Kinsella. Author of an insane number of books, Sophie's newest novel is Christmas Shopaholic, out now, and it is truly, truly brilliant. So funny and warm and compelling, especially if you're a fan of the series, like me. In this conversation, we talk about returning to Becky Bloomwood yet again, how Sophie finally had to reread some of her own books, and how the series remains so incredibly relatable and appealing 20 years later. This episode was recorded as a live event at the Romantic Novelist Association's Winter Party, so that was nice, and thanks for having us. I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think, and don't forget to rate and subscribe. Thank you! I'm very excited because I'm such a huge fan. I know everybody else is here too. So thank you so much for being here.
You're so nice. This is this is already starting.
I know. I'm going to try not to be too embarrassingly fangirl, but it seems a bit inevitable. So I'll just say sorry now, and that'll cover it. So, Christmas Shopaholic, your newest book. I actually struggled to open it because I was too excited. You have to have like non-trembling fingers to read a book, because it is so exciting that Becky Bloomwood is back. It's so brilliant, I adored it. Do you want to start by telling everybody a little bit about it?
Yes, I'd love to. Well, you are so nice, thank you so much. And I mean, it was just really exciting for me to come back to Becky. It's really different, I find, writing a series compared to writing a standalone, and they both have massive advantages. But the advantage of the series is that you have this world that you created and this character that you love, and I love her so much. I think probably just because I've spent so much time in her shoes and seeing the world through her eyes and thinking her crazy thoughts. And it had been a while, and I'd done lots of projects that I absolutely loved, but I missed her, and I knew my readers missed her. And I realised that I'd never done Becky hosting Christmas in a massive way. I referenced Christmas, but I hadn't done the Christmas book. And I'm a massive Christmas fan, basically. I love Christmas. I love the cheesy kind of Hallmark Christmas snowflake, romantic, hot chocolatey kind of Christmas vibe. I love that. Yeah. And we all have to shop at Christmas,
yeah,
so that's a given. So I already knew how she could. I mean, we all get into kind of some kind of shopping
Christmas
nightmare,
frenzy. Yeah,
at Christmas, and this was Becky Bloomwood, so it seemed like the perfect. I couldn't actually think why I hadn't done it before.
Yeah.
And then I just had kind of fun, really, I think, bringing her up to date a bit as well. So kind of plunging into a few things that maybe weren't around when I started her many years ago now, like online shopping, and she's got a sister who's very, very worthy, who's a really good foil for Becky, and is always sort of, you know, she wants the vegan Christmas lunch, and she thinks they should all be very sustainable, and she's basically the sort of the conscience that Becky, you know, is sort of searching for. Jess's voice is that for her.
Yeah.
And so I just had the most enormous fun writing Becky Bloom and trying to host Christmas for the first time in her life, and it all going horribly wrong.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm alone in feeling this intense emotional connection to Becky after, I mean, it is nearly 20 years of Becky Bloom.
Insane.
Absolutely amazing. Do people tell you that a lot, that they feel that connection with her?
Yeah. People feel like she's real.
Yeah.
And they feel she's like a mutual friend that we have.
Yeah.
So in fact, they know me as well. And it does feel like just a universe which, for me, just continues existing even when I'm not writing it. And when I catch up with it, there it is. And I mean, I've said this, I've talked a lot about Becky over the years. It's been a kind of an amazing journey. But when I first started writing her, I thought that this was some little story that a few other people would relate to. You know, I just thought, well, I think like this, and I can understand why she's so excited about these bargains or you know, whatever it might be, or how she feels when she opens her visa bill, you know, and maybe a few other people will. And what blew me away was how many other people did and still do and sort of reference her, which is a bit
worrying. I think a lot of my personality has been based on her. I don't know what that says about me, but it's true. And I feel very protective of her. I'm sure you do too, probably more so. But also of her relationship with Luke, and it's a funny thing because when I'm reading this book, and there are moments where like she does something, I won't do any spoilers, but usually in a book, I'm like, oh yeah, drama, do the thing that you shouldn't do. Not in that. I want them to sit in a room for 350 pages and just be nice to each other. I'm so protective of their relationship. Please promise me you will never endanger them.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's a bit of a, I'm not going to call it exactly a hiccup, but there's a sort of, you know, a bit of a little looming threat in this book. But, you know, I'm going to just say it's a Christmas book. It, you know, we like happy endings. But when I sort of mentioned the potential storyline, my publisher, he got incredibly kind of like, what? Like, okay, well, you know, and you can see he was thinking, just within reason, because I think there is a sort of spectrum that you just don't want to go outside. And I think when you write a book, I mean, it's quite nice to be talking to like writers now, because you can talk about actual writing, but you know, you kind of set your tone, you set your parameters. You think, how far is this drama going to go for this palette that you're painting with? And with Becky, I just feel like there's just so, you know, there's, like her finances, poof, you can veer like this. But I feel sort of similar with Luke. Actually, I had a new live stream. So I did an event last year, I think it was, and somebody asked the question, have you ever thought about really challenging yourself and doing a different kind of book? And I said, well, you know, sometimes I have thought about, should I do a book that has a sad ending? And this woman in the audience just went, no! Not in panic!
Please, there's enough bad things in the world, we just need joy from you.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
So what's the process when you return to the Shopaholic books? Do you reread all the others? I know you've said that you don't reread.
I don't reread. And I actually made myself go back when I wrote this. But it goes against the grain. And what I find very sort of surreal is that some people send me such lovely messages and Twitters and they say things like, you know, oh, I'm rereading this book again. And I'm like, God, I don't do that.
Yeah. Because I think I've read your books more than you have.
I'm sure you would win the quiz. Because I'm just always eyes forward. What's the next book? What's the book after that? You know, where are we going? And I have this awful habit of when I look back wanting to sort of edit and like slightly cringe and all, you know. So that's not very helpful.
But whenever I meet authors, I feel like it seems to be absolutely split between people who reread their books and obsessively obsess and those who will never look at their books again. I mean, there's people nodding here. But was it weird then rereading it? Were you laughing out loud?
Do you know, actually, it was quite nice, because there were bits that I thought, oh, actually, yeah, no, I do like that. And actually informed what I could do in this book and just kind of reminded me of the world. I didn't need to be reminded. I mean, they are kind of etched in my soul, which is another reason that I don't reread. I mean, I know them. But actually, it was quite nice to get the flow and see how things have progressed. And also kind of just remember little details that, you know, that might have come in. Yeah. More about the secondary characters than about Becky, because it's, you know, it's quite a world.
Yeah, because I was imagining maybe a wall in your house that's just, this happened in this year.
Yeah, the Becky wall.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are characters that you have to keep track of, never mind Becky. Like, there's so many things that happen.
It's the universe. Yeah. And also deciding who's going to be in the book is quite decision, because, you know, I've got a lot of cast members by now, but you can't be bringing everybody into every single book, so I had to make some tough choices.
Be brutal, yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah. They're on the sidelines, they're waiting for next time.
But you never get bored of Becky?
No.
That's so nice.
No.
She's so likeable, though, like, and I know we obviously focus a lot on her spending habits, but her kindness and generosity, honestly, some of the moments in this book really genuinely made me cry a lot.
Well, that is so nice. That's so nice to hear. I mean, I think she's somebody who, like we all do, she grows up, she tries, she has good intentions, she does, she has changed. Yeah. You know, she's not quite what she was when she started out, but she's still the same, and she's just kind of modified. And I think has just become, as you say, I mean, this book is all about her wanting to please everybody, maybe to a fault. Yeah. Which also, I think, is quite a Christmas habit that we can get into. And you know, she has quite a demanding set of friends and family and makes the mistake of setting up a WhatsApp group, so don't be doing that. And asking for suggestions, also don't do that. Don't need suggestions, just present.
Yeah. It's also interesting to me reading it, I mean, across 20 years, the books, because my focus shifts as well. I was so into the mum and Janice's friendship, and I never sort of took any notice at the beginning of those two characters, but they're so relatable, and the way sort of friendships move on, and maybe there's some, again, don't want to do any spoilers.
Bit of tension,
yeah, and that's such an interesting aspect. Is that something, was that a deliberate decision you wanted to explore friendships moving?
I think that, I sort of feel like, this is actually what happens in our lives. You know, we sort of take our parents for granted, just there they are. Mm. And then actually sometimes, you know, they make a bold step. As, I mean, Becky's parents, I mean, this is very early on in the book, so it's not really a spoiler. They decide that they've had enough of being suburban parents, you know, wearing appropriate clothes and playing golf, and they're going to move to Shoreditch and be hipsters. And
it's so funny.
Suddenly Becky's looking at her parents with a sort of new eyes, like, what? You're doing what? And I think sometimes you do wake up, if you've been slightly in your tunnel, and they're like, my life and my life and my love life and my, and like, oh wait, my parents, yeah, no, they do stuff, right? They've got, you know, decisions to make, and they've got friendships. And so I think there's a bit of that. And I think that often comes about actually when, you know, Becky has a child, and that you sort of comes full circle, and you suddenly look at your own parents, and you think, oh wow, yeah, being a parent's
quite hard, isn't it? Yeah.
And so I think that's still sort of part of the same journey, really.
I mentioned to a 20-year-old this week that I was interviewing you, and this is patronising, but I sort of assumed they wouldn't be as excited about the Shopaholic books as me. Completely mad, like, excited, screaming in my face.
That's really sweet.
Which, to me, I mean, they're as old as the first Shopaholic book.
I know, right?
So I wondered how you feel about the fact that it still has such an enduring, broad appeal, these books.
I mean, I'm just blown away. I just feel so lucky that I seem to be able to write books that people can tap into. And there really is not, like you might say, a readership or a demographic or anything, because I've been to events and seen readers of all ages. I mean, honestly, you know, from sort of 11 up to 90-something. And quite often I get mother and daughter pairings coming to events, which is just so lovely. And, you know, just sort of lucky me, really. And I mean, I all tribute to Becky. Yeah, I feel she is a
you
real...
You can probably take some credit.
Well, you know,
literally wrote
her.
Amazing. So I'm going to interrupt proceedings. Before we get into more general writing, I'm going to do a quick fire round, get to know you round.
Oh, yes.
Except they don't have to be quick answers.
No,
it's more like a medium to slow fire round, so go with it. Are you ready for some in-depth personal questions, Sophie?
I'm steeled.
Okay.
Braced.
What is your favourite supermarket?
Okay. Can I say it's one that I've never visited yet?
No.
Yes, no. We have an Aldi opening near us.
Oh, and you're
excited. I have become obsessed. I don't know, I've just projected.
You think it's going to be all your dreams
Yeah, it's going to be every single dream come true. I'm just incredibly excited, and I don't want anyone to spoil it. So I only have to hear good things about Aldi.
What are you going to buy first?
I'm going to buy the thing I didn't know I needed, like some biscuits in a funny shape.
And,
or like a weird thing in the centre aisle. That,
amazing.
You know, yeah.
Okay.
Super excited.
Do you ever Google yourself?
Oh, do I? I'm more likely to Google facts. Like, I have this awful thing where I can't remember stuff. I have a terrible, terrible memory. And sometimes I get asked a question and I think, oh, I've been asked that before. I better make sure I don't contradict myself. Because I literally was once. I was asked, what's your favourite Jane Austen novel? And I kind of thought, I'm sorry, I don't have one. I don't really have a favourite anything.
I cherish it as well. It's not being complicated.
What's your favourite thing? So I went, oh, Emma. And this person got actually a bit prickly. And this is a number of years ago. So, well, I read online that it was Pride and Prejudice. So, number one, they're asking me. And number two, you know, sorry.
Maybe they bought you a first edition of Pride and Prejudice.
Toss. So I do sometimes check up on things I feel I ought to know about myself.
That's good, I like that. Have you ever had to sign a fan's body?
Don't remember a body. I've had to sign a skateboard.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I've had to ask somebody if they will marry somebody in a book.
No.
Yeah.
Explain that.
A guy.
So a fan got in touch?
Yes, and said, I want to propose to my girlfriend using Shopaholic Ties the Knot. Will you please write, I can't remember the names now, you know, will you marry me? And it worked.
No,
said,
that's
yes.
Amazing.
I know.
Aww. I know. Have you ever seen or spoken to them since? Are they still together?
I'm assuming yes. I'm assuming blissfully happy.
Aww.
I know.
What do you like when you're angry?
I'm quite silent. I'm working out how, you know, how this ought to go. And since it never does go like that, I generally put that into a book. I never say the right thing. If someone's mean in real life, the awful thing is they don't learn their lessons like they do in novels. And I find this quite frustrating. So I think, no, that person should not be like this. They should learn. They should apologise.
Yeah.
They should have an epiphany.
Yeah.
They should say, oh my God, it's all so clear. My life has been on the wrong path, but now I'm turning it around. They never do any of this.
Is this why we're all writers? Because we want to live out these fantasies.
Yeah, exactly. It's all deeply frustrating in real life, which is why I don't watch the telly anymore. I've given up on news, honestly. I'm just like, fiction!
Yes,
where
please.
It all works out.
Amazing. Okay.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, Donald, surviving that. We all know you so well now. Back to writing questions, that's why we're here. You have written more than 30 books, is that right?
Ooh.
Surely it must be more.
No. Maybe.
Oh my God. Does it blow your mind?
Fairy ones, they're quite small. Yes, I mean, it would do if I ever thought about it like that.
Looking at your wall.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You just, like I say, I'm an eyes forward type of a person. Yeah. So I don't really, you know, people come up with sort of figures of like, you know, how many books you've done or what, and I'm like, I honestly like, it's a bit like when you look at your shoulder and you're like, what, you gave birth? Really? Yeah. I don't really remember that. I think I slightly blanked that. It's sort of similar thing. You know, it's amazing. But what I'm really thinking about is what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, so you don't sit in front of your Wikipedia page going, I'm amazing.
I will. Not yet. Maybe I should do that along with the date.
You really should. Yeah. Do you ever forget some books when fans come up and talk to you about their favourite AI?
Do you know, I probably, in the dim and distant books that I wrote many years ago, especially the ones that I wrote, you know, before even Shopaholic, quite a while ago, it's not that I've forgotten the story. I might possibly not remember every single character's name.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody said to me randomly, well, this character, I might be a kind of like, remind me, because, you know, that's a lot of names.
Yeah, and you have to keep coming up with character names.
Well,
I know.
Do you
have a list of all the ones you've used?
No, I should.
You really should.
I should. I've sometimes been known to call two characters in the same book the same name.
That's what editors are for.
Yeah, no, it's literally that. Like, okay, so the guy who lives next door is called Mark, and also her colleague at work is called Mark. You know, could we change all this? Because when I'm in the throes of it, I mean, it's bizarre. Some names I find, they're really, really important to me.
Yeah.
Like Becky, you know. Like my heroines, like really main characters. Yeah. But sometimes I know what sort of a name I want it to be, but I don't really mind. Yeah. So I'll put in, you know, something for now, and then I forget, and then they all end up being called Mark or whatever. And anyway, my brother-in-law's called Mark, so I can never use Mark. So that one's actually off limits.
Are books still fun to write for you after all this time? They don't lose their novelty.
Oh, God, no. I mean, every story is different. Every plot twist is interesting in a different way. Every character, you know, I mean, I think the minute it's boring, you need to take a break.
Yeah.
You know, you need to just sort of, like, you've been doing it
go
too
on
much.
Holiday.
You need to like, go on holiday and maybe just read some more books and remember why books are amazing. I mean, there's nothing more inspiring than reading an amazing book by somebody else and thinking, wow, God, kudos, that's amazing. You know, it's kind of, it's inspiring for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always really fascinated by how different author writing schedules are. I'm sure we all have very different schedules. Do you plan your books out or wing it? And then are you very strict with yourself when you're writing?
I am quite an obsessive planner. I love planning. In fact, I would go so far as to say I'm a planning geek. I just get joy from cards on the walls. I mean, I have many different systems going at once, but for me, I just love like the rhythm of a good plot. Just sensing the ebb and flow and the turns and where it's going to go. And which is not to say that it doesn't change as it goes along, because it always does. But I like to know, at least have a game plan before I start. And I think that way as well, you know, it kind of feels like it's bursting out of you because you know what you want to do. You're not kind of cautiously going, oh, maybe there's some... I mean, that's just how I am. I've got a friend who does exactly the opposite and sits down and just, bloop, right, you know, here we go, words, you know.
Yeah. And I bet it would be a 50-50 split here. Like, everyone I speak to has a different way of doing it. It's astonishing.
And I think, you know, there's a difference between the plot and the voice. And I think the voice you sometimes can't get until you just sit down and start writing it and hearing it. And that really is kind of... It's like feeling your way into it.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can plan that in advance.
Yeah.
But I think, well, for me, plot, you can just step back, think what you're aiming for. And also don't rush it, because the first version of the plot, it might be completely serviceable, you know, it would work, but it might not be quite as crunchy as something that you come up with a month later when you've been just letting it sit for a while. So I think I don't like rushing that stage.
So then when you come to actually writing, are you a 9-to-5 person?
I am a word count person. I can't predict hours.
Oh, really?
But I aim, once I'm in the swing of it, I aim for 1,000 words a day.
That's good.
You know, if you just keep doing that, add them up.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that maths for me. How long is a day?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if a book's 90, 100,000.
Sure.
There's an element of rewriting.
Yeah. Do you take weekends off?
It depends.
Oh,
it
just depends. When you're really in full flow.
Yeah, if I'm really... Yeah. When I'm really writing, yeah. I don't really... take any time off in the sense that
because you do also have many, many children.
I do, yes.
Do you send them away?
It dovetails.
Sure.
It dovetails. They're quite used to me sitting with a slightly absent
glazed the glazed parenting months.
Yeah. Because you know, it's all going on. But it kind of works quite well. I mean, you know, it goes in fits and starts. I mean, you're all writers, it's unpredictable. You know, you might wake up in the morning and you've written 1,000 words before 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Or you might be sitting there at 6 p.m. going, oh my God, nightmare. So, you know.
Yeah, and you have been doing this for 20 years. Sorry, I keep saying it. It's just astonishing. It's amazing. Everything has changed, though, in that time. In terms of the world and internet and phones and all this, what's been had the biggest impact on writing books for you?
I tell you what, I mean, you know, in this audience, we're all kind of doing the same thing. And personally, I think mobile phones are an absolute menace because you can be in touch with people. And you know what?
Ruining stories.
Yes. Misunderstandings, miscommunications. All of this was so much simpler when, you know, you couldn't find a payphone. And now there's kind of no excuse because if you haven't got a phone on you, somebody's got a phone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fun in a different way because you can have very, you know, and I wrote a whole book about two people linked by a phone.
Sure.
You know, so you have to kind of take what the world gives you and run with it.
Yeah.
And find the potential. But I mean, I think back in the day, you know, it was kind of easier to keep people apart. I think that's what I do find.
Let's just set all of our books in the 90s
I know. And actually, you know, you see this, there's quite a lot of, oh, no signal.
Drought. Oh, awkward.
Because otherwise, you know, you would just send them a text and just go, oh, sorry, and that's like, that was a short book.
Oh, that's hilarious. Did you always write? Were you a child that was sitting in a corner reading and writing?
I think I probably was, but without thinking of it in any more... I mean, in fact, not even writing. I think I walked around sort of slightly narrating to myself how I look back.
Narrating your own life.
Yeah, or just sort of observing and kind of picking things up. But I wasn't the child saying I'm going to be a writer.
No.
I definitely wasn't, no.
Did you have other plans?
I did a lot of music. Astronaut, yeah. I mean, no, I didn't study English. I mean, I didn't do English A-level.
No.
No, I was not the literary type at school.
How did it then happen?
I read a lot.
Sure.
I don't know, I sort of did it despite. I mean, I was kind of quite good at maths and, you know, I sort of did different things.
Did you study economics? Have I made that up?
Well, yeah, I went to university to do music.
Oh, right.
So I was quite, I mean, music was, this is the thing, if you are a child who can do music, everyone just goes, oh, music.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're the music one. Yeah,
what
yeah.
kind of music?
Piano, violin, I mean, the whole bit, you know.
Do you still play all those?
I sometimes play the piano.
Karaoke after this
day. Yeah, no, I don't do. We didn't do that. But, you know, people do sort of, they don't mean to pigeonhole you, but it's like, oh, well, you can do that, so that's what you do. And I could do it, and I got to university, and I did a bit of it, and I was like, oh, I think I've had enough of this, actually. You know, just because you can do something, it doesn't mean you should do it. You know, I've sort of had enough. So I changed course to PPE, which
is?
I love, politics, philosophy, and economics. And what I really like is philosophy.
Yeah.
Because you didn't need to know any facts, and I've never been very good at facts. You just kind of talk about wing it. You know, are we really here? Well, that's a good question. I'll just speed on about this for a while. And actually, the thing that really, I think, started teaching me to write was that we had to read our essays out loud.
Oh, really?
Which is, you know, quite an ordeal. And because I naturally like to sort of entertain, I think I picked up, like, even if you're reading out some really turgid economics essay, I was almost learning to edit myself as I did it, because I was thinking, well, I didn't need to say all that, and that was boring. I could have cut this, and I could have, you know. So that was actually, wasn't intended to be, but quite a good writing masterclass.
Of course.
And then, I don't know, I just figured I liked words and took it from there.
Be more specific for me. So what happened? You finished your
degree? I finished my degree. I had no idea what to do. I'd sort of just about worked out that I liked writing, you know, writing. Yeah. But I mean, I wasn't thinking novels. I applied for jobs as a journalist, and literally the only one I even got an interview for was on Pensions World.
Sure, yeah.
So I started as editorial. Yes, exactly. Editorial assistant on Pensions World, exactly. I mean, Becky's job, that was my job.
Amazing.
Just completely. Yeah,
right, what you know, guys, right.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, at the time I was like, what, pensions? I didn't even know what a pension is. I don't know about different types of pension. You know, and I was having to kind of absolutely bluff my way through meetings and press conferences and just kind of nod and, what are these words? I don't know. But, you know, that again was valuable. You had to write the piece or else there's a big white hole in the magazine, and you learn to kind of bone up on a subject and kind of sound a bit convincing even when you really still don't have much idea. And actually, the fiction, I suppose, moment was reading books on the way to work and on the way back from work, and just kind of, and actually Joanna Trollope was quite an influence, because I, you know, it was at that time she was publishing all these books, and they were so contemporary, and I think that's what I responded to. They weren't, you know, they weren't the kind of Jackie Collins very glamorous lives which I could never aspire to. They were things that I recognised, and I was like, oh, okay, you can just write about the world that is around us. That's interesting. I think I'd like to do that. And so that was sort of the first time I thought, oh, okay, this is what I'm going to try and do.
Yeah, and you initially did write with your real name, Madeleine Wickham, right? Was the tennis party, was that your first?
Yeah, that was my first.
Amazing. I love that. Do you remember how you felt when that was coming out and reactions and things?
It was surreal. Seeing it on a shelf in Smith's. I mean, you know,
there's still nothing like
that. And, you know, I mean, I hadn't expected it to be published at all. I'd kind of got to the end, which I think is the, you know, that's the thing, get to the end. Get to the end. And what I was hoping for in my wildest dreams was, you know, kind of, well, you seem to have accomplished, you know, the start and the end of a book, and next time when you do one which will be better, which we might consider, take on these tips, and you're not there yet, but this is what we can tell you. That was the level I was kind of, you know, assuming that I would be at. And so when it was more like, well, we'd like to publish it, that's the moment I just couldn't believe. Like, what, this, really? And kind of life changed forever.
When those first books were coming out, do you remember whether you were scared or just excited? Did you read reviews?
Did I? I probably did. I mean,
do you read them now?
I do, but I try not to, you know, obsessively read everything that everybody is going to say about what I'm doing, because what I've learned, I mean, and this is something that I think is just useful for all of us, is, and this is something actually you get over a span of time, I find, you realise how different everybody's opinions are, and that all these opinions are valid. And I love it when I read a review. You know, I love to read a critical review which gives me something that is a learning point. That is so useful. If it's a review that says, well, I hate this kind of book, that's not quite so helpful, because I like this kind of book, so we kind of already don't really agree on that. Mm. But what I've also learned is that it can be not somebody's favourite book, and that's fine, because, you know, I've had people come up to my table when I've been signing books, and literally they will say, my favourite book is this one, my favourite book is this one, my favourite book is this one. My least favourite book, you know, people are quite blunt. They say, my least favourite book was this one, didn't get on with that at all. And they go, oh, thank you for that. And then the next person, like, that's my favourite book.
Exactly.
You know, everybody has a favourite, it's valid, yeah. It doesn't matter, you know, as long as, I mean, the way I see it is if I can write a book that some people like, then, you know, that's all you can pick to do. Really.
It's a very subjective job that we
do. It's very subjective.
Yeah, don't listen to anyone who says it's not good, basically, that's what
it's brilliant.
Everything we do is brilliant and perfect, okay? what are you working on next?
A new book.
Can you tell us anything about
that? That's kind of it, really. It's a standalone.
Okay, amazing.
Yeah.
And are you going to do it? Because you obviously did the young adult fiction. Would you do that kind of thing again?
Oh, do you know, that was such a joy.
Oh, so good.
You're so nice. You're so nice.
I'm sorry, I'm such a fan girl.
Yeah, well, I mean, the things I wrote, again, I wrote that book and I didn't really think, oh, I think I'll write some YA. The story came to me and I wrote it, and then at the end of it, I sort of thought, gosh, what is this? This is not quite the same as what I've been doing, and it's got a teenage protagonist, so it ended up being sort of sold as a YA. And I loved it. I have to say, you know, for me, time is a big problem.
Of course.
And, you know, there's only so many writing hours.
You say that, but you get a lot done.
I know, you know, and so it's one of these things that is sort of on my back burner, like one day.
So one day.
One day.
But can you tell us anything about the book that you're working on at the moment?
No, I'm a bit superstitious. I know I'm superstitious.
Tell a room full of writers your ideas.
Do you know what? I don't. But no, I mean, I saw another writer talking once, and she described her sort of fledgling ideas as sort of very fragile butterflies, and if the cold wind gets them. And I, you know, not everybody is like this, but this is what I'm like.
I think, yes. We're all crawling back into the cocoons at any available opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And when is that going to be out? Do you have a date?
Also don't know. Okay. Sorry, I'm being really on
soon. No. Yeah. I like it. Keeping it mysterious. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And isn't she amazing?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.